Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
All right. In the first half, we talked to producer and China expert Chris Fenton, and we really get into a meaningful conversation about what we need to do moving forward with China from a military kind of standpoint, but mostly from a movie making and sort of cultural standpoint. So he really takes a deep dive into that subject, and you're going to want to listen to that. Also, I'll give you some of my own personal opinions on life. First, bet online. Nothing to bet on, right? Wrong. Bet online has hundreds of events, games, props to wager on. Bring Vegas online poker and blackjack right to you, your computer or phone. Miss the NFL? They have live daily Madden. NFL 20 simulations to wager on, plus Idol, American Idol, stocks, even Nathan's hot dog eating contest coming up. 4th of July, man. It's coming up fast. Visit the website or use your mobile device and join today. BetOnline's exclusive partner, Podcast One. Sign up for a free account. Use the promo code PODCAST1 for your sign-up bonus. Visit betonline.ag. Don't forget, use the promo code PODCAST1 for your sign-up bonus today. Let's have a little fun. Play a little blackjack. Do it from the comfort and safety of your own home. BetOnline, your sportsbook experts.
Podcast One presents. This is a collect call from Sing Sing.
My name is John J. Lennon. I'm locked up for selling drugs and committing murder. I'm also a contributor for Esquire magazine and the Marshall Project. So I'm a writer and I'm a prisoner. Imagine trying to stay focused and talk about issues of substance with geeks slamming, prisoners screaming, and PAs blaring in the background.
Get new episodes every Wednesday on Spotify, Podcast One, and Apple Podcasts.
From Carolla One Studios and Gina's house and Brian's house, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Lauren Lopkus and Chris Fenton. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and now, Natalia is more concerned with him wearing gloves now than he ever was when he was a boxer. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. A mandate to get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing. I'd love to see those ratings go up, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
Hey, buddy, you got hot phones.
Hot phones back in the studio, and we can talk to you. I love that. Lauren Lapkus is going to be on the show. I know her mainly from Crashing. She plays the ex-wife or the first wife on Crashing. She's so good. So I'm very excited to talk to her because I'm a big fan of hers. And then also Chris Fenton, he's the China expert author. He's a producer's done all these movies, Iron Man 3, Looper, which is a crowd favorite around here, Waiting, Blockers, 47 Ronin, Point Break, the remake, sorry, and so many other good movies, but has a real good insight on China. And we're just going to have to reevaluate how we deal with China, which will be something, some good residue that comes off of this. I think it's like our relationship with China has just been kind of like a really bad marriage that needed some counseling, but it just neither side ever really wanted to sit down in a therapist's office. And this virus outbreak is like the loss of our youngest son. It's like now we're forced.
It's the tipping point.
We have to sit down with somebody and work this out because it was a thing that nobody really wanted to get into. Nobody really wanted to, and especially nobody here who was making a lot of money. I mean, nobody, the NBA and movie industry and many industries that do lots of manufacturing. I mean, and think about the power of Apple products, the movie industry, the NBA. But think about the power they have. And you just think about the little dust up with the NBA, which felt like almost nothing, you know, from 5 months ago. And one guy just sort of said, hey, I stand with Hong Kong. And everyone just turned on him. Like the entire NBA turned on him. And think about how powerful those voices are if you're going to raise your hand. You're just going to – and I don't even know what he said. He didn't really say anything. He just said, you know, he stands with this group that's being – or at least are attempting to oppress. So now we're just going to have to completely reevaluate everything. Mm. And we'll talk to Chris and find out what we should do.
It's like therapist says, or my therapist has said this about other couples, said, you know, if you're doing couples counseling, I could help you stay together, but more than likely, I can help you break up. And maybe we need to break up with China.
Right.
And China was the husband who made a lot of money, would come home late at night, and America's like, where have you been? And you're like, don't worry about it. It's not none of your business.
So we're going to have to work this one out, and we'll talk to Chris and start with that, start unraveling that. Dr. Drew had another one of his kind of asleep at the wheel podcasts with me. Now, the last time we did one of these, he was in New York and I couldn't see him. This time I could see him, but he was still just staring at his phone, I think. And I thought, I was just listening to it. It's a little hard to tell in real time, but when you go back and listen to it, at least for me, I go, Jesus Christ, that guy was just, I think he told me, God, who cut his finger?
Right.
Yeah. Drew, you're telling me a celebrity. Chris Hardwick cut his finger and was texting Drew. This could have been that portion of the show. It just could have been another portion of the show where Drew just checks out. Because I just talk and he just answers text while I talk.
Right.
Well, I'll play it to you. And I thought Brian could be ready with his old drops from New York. Now that the New York was him in New York in his apartment, clearly just doing a crossword on his computer while I talk. All right, we'll play it. Sorry, go ahead.
I've said it about the immune system. You can't wipe everything down. You can't wash your hands every 10 seconds. You can't use the fucking veggie wash. Like, you need to get something in your system so that your system has something to wrestle with so it can build up its strength and its skills. There's an emotional side to this as well. And these people's brains are turning into fucking mush. We needed, and again, I don't know what, the thing that's scary about this whole thing is, somehow me pushing back against governmental overreach is now un-American.
Oof.
That's the scary part.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Now that's that's a weird position in history to be in, right?
Yeah. How weird.
Well, you turn on the news, who's the problem? The government or the people who are going to the beach?
Right.
Jeez. That's not me.
All right, Drew, do we get paid the same to do this show? Or do you, like, you sit around and, ooh,
hey, I am sympathetic to what you're saying. And it's, and when you construct it that way, it's spooky. It's spooky.
All right. Well, do some talking, would you?
He's probably just nodding his head while I talk.
He's on auto, Drew.
Yeah. Anyway,
that in some ways topped the first one.
It does.
Maybe.
I do all the commercial reads. Okay. I start the show. I end the show, and we split the money. And at some point, it sort of dawns on me, wait a minute. Why am I doing 86% of the show, and then we just whack the money in half? But that's
it's his studio.
That's right. No, that was from home, by the way. But he'll come in here, and he's much better when he's close to me because he can't get away with as much. That is phone. See, that's probably phone on his lap. You know, that's phone on the hip, and it's out of the frame of the Zoom. So he's kind of looking down, taking care of business. It's an interesting quality if you think about that quality, which is. It's like when when we're talking about, hey, Robin Quivers.
Yes, Adam.
When we're talking about constructing the test,
Oh, the test. I'm familiar with the test.
Yeah. Well, I know. I know it's a lot of bad blood there with Drew. But when we're putting together the narcissism test, it was a full year of him being checked out and wanting to interview celebrities and having them fill out paperwork like during the show that I kept telling him, you can't do that. And he'd always kind of be like, huh? Oh, what? Oh, I didn't know what was going on.
I was in the middle of reading a news story and he shoved it in my face.
Oh, maybe that's why you were the highest scoring on the narcissist.
I don't even know what I put down. I'm trying to tell people about studies that find certain things about the human condition. And he's telling me to rate myself on narcissism. I can't do two things at once, Adam.
Yeah, it just. Look, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but the fact that you get so bent out of shape about being off the scale on the narcissism test suggests you're a narcissist.
Excuse me. I think we've gone around and around and around about this a million times. And I've told you before, there is nothing narcissistic about me, Adam Carolla. I am Robin Quivers. I am a very essential part of the Howard Stern show. I keep the world informed about what's going on. And I don't know what they do without me. That's not narcissistic. That's fact.
All right. Well, fair enough. We'll just agree to disagree. I'll tell you who did not score very high amongst female celebrities on that narcissism test was Gwen Stefani. She had a very low score, so no one accused her of being a narcissist. Gwen Stefani.
You know why? Because when Drew asked her about the test, she just said, "Don't speak. I know just what you're thinking. So please stop explaining. Don't tell me 'cause it hurts." And that's all he needed to know.
That's all I had to say.
That's all he had to say. All right. I also don't think – I think Cher did a sort of – she was in the 70% bracket.
She was regretful. She wishes she could have done it differently.
She wishes she had a clock
when
to turn back.
When she looked at that test, if I could turn back time, if I could find a way, I'd take back all the answers on this test and you'd stay.
You know, I'm thinking about the Hispanic couple that lives above you in the apartment right now that's quarantined. It's like, we got a crazy bitch. In the middle of the day, I hear screaming out in all these different voices.
It's a single family home. Your point's taken.
She's one of those Hollywood Boulevard impersonators working on some material.
I'll tell you who scored incredibly high. One Nancy Grace.
Oh, sure.
Now, that is conjecture, Adam. That is not true. I know you like to come up with your own facts. I know you just pull them out of thin air. But you know what? That's not what Nancy Grace does. Nancy does the work. Nancy does the footwork. Nancy does the hard uncovering of the real facts. And if you took the time to look at the real facts, you'd know that Nancy Grace is modest, Adam. Nancy Grace is humble. She has a humble heart.
And scene. All right. Michael Stockton, 46.
Yes, what's going on, guys?
You ran a red turn arrow?
Oh, yeah, this was a couple months ago, like around November, October.
Mm-hmm.
I ran a red arrow. Cops lit me up. It was nighttime. So I didn't know it was a cop behind me.
Wait, Drew's very interested in this. Drew, he ran an arrow.
He wants to weigh in.
What's that?
Yeah, okay. Drew's weighing in. So there, you got to check behind you. You have to check behind you all the time.
Well, the problem is no new cop cars now are SUVs, so it looks like an SUV. I didn't see lights.
Looks like a Ford Explorer. Right.
Crazy. The lights are now on the mirrors and the headlights. It's not on top.
Right.
So they're all over. Yeah, so what that went on.
What'd the cops say?
Well, I had a couple things going for me. Like, I had turned on the lane where there was nowhere to pull over, so I hit my hazards, drove another mile and a half to turn into a lot, not to not disturb traffic.
Uh-huh.
He hit his headlights on. I stuck my hand out the window, fingers spread open, both hands. And then I was in my suit because I just came off of work. He's like, "What are you?" I was like, "Just got to work." He goes, "The light was red." I went, "No, it was green. There was no cars. It was green." He goes, "Come on." I go, "Okay. Don't do it again."
And that's it. But,
Stockton justice.
Cool guy.
Thanks, Michael.
Well, if I stayed in the lane, he wouldn't be able to go. They just go.
Look,
when nobody's there.
Obviously, the best thing in my life is driving through Red Arrows. It is best decision I've ever made, bar none. It has changed my life, and I've been doing it for 20 years. So, I was talking to Olga about this in the kitchen the other day. Olga's one of these people who, like, shits on your point and then kind of goes back and turns out she's making your point. But I'll give a perfect example. I said to her, listen, the reason I've never gotten a ticket? Why is it? It's 20 years of going through red turn arrows. Why, you'd think, well, by now you'd get a ticket. Why wouldn't you get a ticket? Everyone else would be scared of getting a ticket. I do check my rearview mirror to see if there's a cop behind me, but then I drive through. So why not? And I now have expanded my repertoire of driving through red signals as well on small streets or intersections where there's nobody around. I just drive through them, look in the rearview, drive through them. So I've never gotten a ticket. I've never gotten a ticket because cops don't come to you. You come to the cops. They set up on Forest Lawn Drive. They set up on Forest Lawn Drive along the long sweeping sort of blind turn where everyone is going 51 and it's marked for 40 and the guy's backed up the driveway of the cemetery and he's got the radar gun. That's how they make money. If they just randomly went to intersections looking for crime, they wouldn't make any money. They go to the bottom of the hill. They're not at the top of the hill. They're at the bottom of the hill where they know you're speeding. And that's how they make their money. They make their money on the grapevine. They're driving past you, hitting you with radar. That's what they do. What do you think meter maids do? They go to the places where they know there's going to be a lot of action. They go up to the hills at night and look for people who don't have their tires turned the right direction. Right. Which, by the way, in an era of all automatic cars and no more, you know, popping out of gear and rolling down the hill, I don't even know the last time I used my emergency brake. But anyway, so I was explaining to Olga, I've never gotten a ticket because they don't hang out in the intersection because I'm the only one who's doing this. And then Olga goes, no, they gave me a ticket in the intersection. I said, what? Would they give you a ticket in the what were you doing in the intersection where they gave you a ticket? She said, I drove a four-way stop sign. I said, okay, but that's not what I'm talking about. Four-way stop sign is a perfect example of what I mean, right, which is there's one that's 100 feet from here, Maxipata, and everyone has gotten a ticket in it because when people see four-way stop, they roll through it. Cops know, easy pickings. We can rape citizens by waiting at the four-way stop sign. So everyone who works here, except for me, because I don't come in from that direction, has rolled through that four-way stop sign and gotten a ticket because that's where they hang out. Everyone rolls through a four-way stop sign. Nobody but me drives through an arrow. That's why I don't get the ticket, and they do. So everyone who would roll through a four-way stop sign, it's the exact same ticket you'd get for going through an arrow. It's just a ticket. It's a moving violation. And if you're willing to go through a four-way stop sign, or you're willing to go 80 miles an hour on the way to Vegas, well, then add driving through left-turn arrows. Add that to your repertoire because it's a much lower percentage ticket than the former two that everyone engages in.
The psychological barrier, you see that big red arrow staring at you, don't move, but right. it's not that the action isn't that much different.
Right. If you put a native up in a, from a faraway island in a different time, up in an airplane, they would stare out the window and cry and panic the entire time. But I'm saying, let's join the blue-eyed people and enjoy a cocktail in the main cabin. That's what I'm saying, people. You don't have to freak out. It's true. That arrow fucks everyone up because it's red. You know what we can do? If we want to help. Lower that sun visor. Just bring that sun visor down. And now you're just staring at a green light because you put the sun visor down. You've obscured the arrow. And now you're just a fool sitting at sitting, not turning left when it's safe to turn. All right. A lot of this stuff should factor into your life. my
And speaking of the four-way arrow, the four-way stop sign, you've also revolutionized that, because no longer am I a you go ahead wave kind of guy. I'm a point and direct kind of guy because of you.
Yeah, absolutely. When you do the wave, and I don't know why, but the wave only, all that does is create a second wave.
Another wave.
Yes. They say we have to look out for a second wave that's coming in September. I don't know why humans are wired this way, but if you get to a stop sign and you go, yeah, go ahead. The person goes, no, no, you go ahead. Like, I don't know. Just wave and go, thank you. And just drive through it. We're hurting our cause here. All right. Let's see. So what do I want to say? We got we got some calls up there. Oh, I see. It's on the other screen. Oh, I didn't know that, Max Patton. Well, now I know.
Yeah, that's why I shook it.
Yeah, it's good.
Changed a lot.
Good thing I have a peripheral vision over here. Quality products, home. Let's see. Someone's talking about it. My hands are doing. Let me just roll down the line here. Line one. Devin, Pennsylvania, 34.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
I just wanted two things. Thanks for keeping the podcast up during quarantine, and that if you listen to some other podcasts, when they do them from home or not in a studio, they suck as far as quality goes, and your guys have stayed right on point. So good job, Dawson, Chris, you guys, everybody.
Well, thanks. And, you know, we aim to please around here. I actually found that my internet was bad or not as good as I wanted it to be from home, so I just came back into the studio with kind of the skeleton crew. But we like clarity over here, so thanks for listening, Devin. You're in Pennsylvania. Did Pennsylvania do some sort of thing where they were talking about locking down, not opening something for a year or something, or did I hear that right?
I have not heard the year plan yet. The thing that PA is doing, they're trying to open some counties with a red, yellow, green system while keeping other counties closed. But there's a lot of misinformation, and it's not real clear as far as the governor goes. Because I'm in northern PA, but it's very rural, and we don't really have any cases. But we're still, quote-unquote, semi-lockdown, where if you go down to Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Lancaster counties, where there's high populations, they're obviously still on lockdown, and they're trying to figure out if they can open up here but not open down there. It's kind of a cluster at this point in time.
I think I spent a year in a town called Sea Cane, Pennsylvania. Does that sound right?
I'm not familiar with that. You did mention one time that you went to Mansfield University.
Yeah.
I'm like 10 minutes from Mansfield University.
That is rural, man. Or rural, yeah. I should say. Yeah, I mean... A lot of roughneckers, right? Like a lot of guys in the oil industry up there?
Yeah, we are big natural gas industry, which is relatively recent, you know, the last 10 years. It really wasn't here before then. But yes, a lot of natural gas industry going on nowadays.
Sea Cane is a township in Pennsylvania.
Mm. Okay.
Now you know.
Crazy.
Delaware County. We shall try to figure it out. Yeah. Oh, speaking of Drew, that was one of my greatest. We were on a road trip and we drove from, we played the University of Pennsylvania, and we drove from, I think we were driving from the city of Philadelphia to the college, I believe. Anyway, that was a road trip where Drew had food poisoning and was like reeling in the back of this car and throwing up and had diarrhea and everything else. And me and the driver, who was the greatest character ever, could not stop talking about food and getting ourselves Philly cheesesteaks and stuff like that. And Drew at some point just blew up and screamed at both of us, stop talking about food. That's all I remember about that. But I do kind of remember driving by Sea Cane on our way to University of Pennsylvania. Another gig where Drew just got out a folding chair and put a blanket around him and sat there and sweated while I did the entire show. We split the money. Yeah. Remember that show, Drew?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. We split the money right down the middle, but you were sick, and I had to do all the talking, remember?
Right.
Yeah. Right?
Right, right.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Right.
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 Yeah. I'm just saying, how about you kick some of that money back? Hmm?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now we can agree. We finally agree on something.
Crazy.
No, it's not. It's a simple math. We get paid favored nations. We split the money down there. Look, what if we wrote a book and it was 100,000 words and I wrote eight?
Sometimes I do. I'll tell you what.
Well, let me finish my analogy here, Drew. It's a 100,000 word book.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And I write 85,000 words of that book and then we split the money down the middle. Okay.
Right.
No, not all right. Not all right.
Yeah.
No, you're tuned out. You're not listening to what I'm saying. I'm trying to make a passionate point here.
No, no, the phone is not on, the TV is not on. I'm listening to you.
You're not, because I'm suggesting you giving money back to me for all the past work I've done. Almost got it.
Think about it.
All right. I think we've gone far enough down this trail.
But that last one was just, called Drew Mumble.
Well, let me hear it again. Let's hear it again. It's satisfying. There's something satisfying about it. All right. Let's see. Line three. Christian Dallas, 47.
Hey, guys. Gina, congratulations on your upcoming nuptials.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice.
Of course. Brian, you have a tremendous gift for making Dr. Drew funny, man. God bless. Godspeed. And right. Mr. Adam, I just wanted to check in to see. I know you spoke not that long ago. You were either having injections or something done to your hand, and I haven't heard any updates, so I wanted to see how you were doing on that.
This guy, in 30 seconds, he's been more caring than your entire upbringing.
Thank you.
about our lives.
My wife owns a CBD shop, so we just kind of are always concerned about others. So I wanted to see how you were doing, that's all.
You know, my hands are progressively getting worse, and something needs to be done. My knuckles are getting kind of swollen, and I have the index finger. Oh, no, maybe it's the second finger from the pinky on my right hand, which is kind of swelling.
Is it arthritis? I don't
think it's arthritis. It's just from a constant impact. I just wasted my hands for such a long period of time boxing and doing construction.
Adam, I'm in no way attempting to endorse our company or whatever, but I know you've had several CBD companies as sponsors. I say you talk to somebody that's educated and really go through that system, because we have had, and I mean, if you know how to use it and use properly, you can get some tremendous benefits. There's no hocus pocus to it.
Okay.
That, but you have people. So before you start getting cuts and injections and everything else, seriously give that a shot. I'm sure that, you know.
Well, I'm all for it. At this particular point, it's actually benefiting me, because my daughter was yelling at me last night for not wearing gloves. Like when I go out, and I said,
if it don't fit,
my hands are jacked up. Like, it is hard to get my pinky into the glove, and so on and so forth. And also,
well, you can still fake it, you know, you can still lie about
it. Oh, you're right.
But your hands can be better.
Yeah, you're right. Thank you, Michael, or Christopher. Sorry. Christian. Sorry. Christian. The thing that I find interesting is I don't know what the science behind the gloves are exactly, in that nobody at the pavilions was wearing gloves inside of the pavilions, and they do not require it. They say you must wear a mask, you may not enter. They don't say anything about gloves, and evidently no one wore gloves who were customers. And I heard an expert saying, well, you don't get it through your skin, you get it on your hand, and then you touch your mouth or your eye or you pick your nose, and that's how you get it. And they said if you're wearing gloves, you still could get it the same way. And I thought, oh, okay. If it, if if it's on your finger or on your finger with a glove, on top of the glove, obviously, it seems like you're doing more by wearing the gloves. But I thought, who would be more meticulous about this than the pavilions in Malibu? Like, yeah. I mean, that ain't, there's no laissez-faire going on there. Somebody,
that's not your Valley Johns.
Right. That is not Johns in the Valley. Yeah. Where you're like, I'll take more pig hoof, please.
That's right.
No, this is like the richest, whitest, most, you know, the women that have tons of plastic surgery done to them. So they're vulnerable. So my take is, if they didn't require it, who is requiring it? And then are you guys finding that stores require it, or people are just doing it?
I have not found stores requiring it. I think it's psychological. I think the thinking behind it is people are less likely to touch their face with gloves on. And I don't know what else it's providing.
Yeah, I haven't seen it required amongst the general public. I've gone to get my blood drawn twice now, and obviously the nurses who are doing the phlebotomy are wearing gloves, and I'm sure that's required there. But the only thing I've heard that's like consistent amongst the medical advice is wash your hands frequently. So I don't think the gloves are, like you said, nothing here or there, because you can touch something and then touch your face with or without a glove. That's not going to make a difference.
Right. And so then you start getting into this realm when you're arguing with people, which is they go, just put the gloves on. What's the big deal? Just put the gloves on. What's the big deal? And you're like, oh, okay, but we could just keep doing everything. That there is no limit to safety. Safety is pretty infinite. You have to kind of stop at some points and go, where are we stopping this? But you do the same thing with, again, I always talk about building. You make scaffolding safe, but you don't eliminate scaffolding. You need scaffolding. Like, it's inherently a little bit dangerous to stand on scaffolding and spread stucco on the side of a three-story building, but that's why you have to make the scaffolding as safe as you can and then proceed. All right, let me hit liquid IV. Easy. Healthy solution to dehydration. One stick of liquid IV in 16 ounces of water provides as much hydration as 2 to 3 bottles of water. A lot of people are staying in. People may be celebrating a little too much. And when I say celebrating, I mean just staying up drinking. Because of this quarantine, you wake up the next day, you're not feeling quite how you would. Or maybe we're going another direction. Maybe you're just on that rowing machine or on that elliptical and going at it. We need proper hydration. It's crucial for your immune system. Vitamin C, and anyone who wants to talk about working out or being hungover, man, you need to be hydrated. It's got vitamin C more than an orange. It's got as much potassium as a banana. That's what Drew would always say to eat if you were hungover. C, B3, B5, B6, B12. Liquid IV is donating 2.3 million servings in response to the COVID-19, and they're going to take their products and get them out to hospitals and first responders and food banks and everything else. It's a great product, and you need it now more than ever. Right, Dawson?
Liquid IV is available nationwide at Target, Whole Foods, and Costco, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code Adam at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you use promo code Adam at liquidiv.com. Get better hydration today at liquidiv.com, promo code Adam.
Yeah, and when we start traveling again, definitely throw a few of those in the backpack for sure.
For sure.
Chris Fenton has been on the show before. He's got a book called Feeding the Dragon, Inside the $1 Trillion Dilemma Facing Hollywood, the NBA, and American Business. Oh, God, I didn't even look down at the rest of it, but that's exactly what we're talking about. What are we going to do about China? We'll talk to him right after this.
Quarantine has been tough on all of us. We haven't bathed in days. We've gained no less than 10 pounds each. And we're starting to think about reporting our family for a Ted Kaczynski kind of crime just so we can have the house to ourselves. We know what you're going through. That's why we at Corolla Drinks are here to help. Head to CorollaDrinks.com today to get your Corona Combo, featuring a bottle to get you through the week or night, and an instructional social distancing t-shirt to inform everyone around you just how far away from one another we're supposed to be. There's only a few more days, weeks, maybe even months left. Remember, you don't have to quarantine alone. Corolla Drinks is here to help. Head to CorollaDrinks.com and get your Corona combo today.
And now, Alcoa presents the COVID-19 edition of Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Santee, California. A 32-year-old man was asked by police deputies to remove the face mask he was wearing while shopping at Food for Less. The mask featured a swastika! Definitely not a Jew!
Wow. Yeah, from your mouth to God's ears. Chris Fenton is with us. We've spoke to him. Let's see, November 2019. So it's not been too long. We learned a lot about China. We're going to learn more now with all this going down. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Yeah, my pleasure. A lot has changed since the last time we spoke. It was pre-COVID and pre a lot of extra tension between the U.S. and China. That's for sure.
Yeah. You know, it's a weird thing. I don't know if you guys have engaged in it, but I have found myself thinking about friends or people in the past, people we've lost, or just people you knew who passed away. And my first thought is like, oh, well, at least they miss this. That's kind of my weird, morbid thought. Like, hey, my buddy Philip the Juggler, at least he missed this. My buddy Jeff Katz. Lining. Yeah, that guy died like 4 months ago. Like, oh, he just missed it. Oh, good for him. Chris, what can we do? Let's start with business. What should business do with China?
Well, it's actually a really fascinating question because myself, the last time I was on the show, I'd just gotten back from a U.S. congressional delegation trip where we were in the mainland of China for 8 days, and then we actually went down and visited Carrie Lam and protesters in Hong Kong. I got back with a certain point of view on things based on that trip and 17, 18 years of pre-existing China work. And then that Daryl Morey tweet came out, which was the Houston Rockets GM, who essentially woke a lot of people up to, the pandering that was going on between industries here in the U.S. trying to get access to that market. And also at the same time, and I didn't talk about it last time I was on the show, but I was in the middle of writing a book about it all. So once the COVID situation hit, you really started to see a lot of change in the way people looked at the relationship. And you saw it from the right and you saw it from the left side of the aisle. A lot of people trying to reevaluate how we're going to move forward with China. I talked to people like Steve Bannon and your friend Tucker Carlson, and obviously they're extremely hawkish on things when it comes to China. And then you see on the Democratic side, there's a lot more of this diplomatic effort or this ability to like, hey, let's keep promoting globalism. It's good for everybody. Where we end up is going to be somewhere in between. But quite frankly, the more this COVID situation goes on, and the more the rhetoric changes between the two countries, the more hawkish I'm getting. In fact, the last op-ed I wrote was actually for the Federalist, and that's obviously a right-leaning publication, and I was pretty hawkish there. So how we address things as an industry and a business and American businesses moving forward is really going to depend on how we come together collectively as a country and start talking about what the new ground rules are, because it seems like we're a little bit all over the place.
Well, in terms of being hawkish, it can be considered hawkish, but it also can be realistic. You know what I mean? Like, we were pretty hawkish on Hitler.
And how?
But he was an evil guy and he needed to be put out of his misery. And like, we've been right and we've been wrong. And so it's not really about like, this guy's a chicken and that guy's a hawk and this guy's a dove with a... another guy's an eagle. It's like, let's really just figure out when to be hawkish and when to be dovish, as long as we're talking about birds. And I don't say that we should be, you don't want to, if you're dovish when you should be hawkish, then you're going to get slaughtered. And on the other hand, we don't want to be hawkish when we should be dovish. So let's try
to figure it out. And I think one of the problems that we have as a society is we really don't understand what evil is anymore. We don't understand that there are people out there, that there are nations that are just evil. They're willing to hurt their own. They're willing to hurt us. They're willing to hurt anybody. We have this sort of feeling like when Sting was singing about Russian moms loving their children, too. Like, we have that feeling of, like, could they want it? They want what's best. Everyone wants Levi's and a convertible Cadillac. They want to listen to Elvis, and they want to enjoy their kids. They want to enjoy their life. First thing we need to do is wrap our minds around the concept that a lot of these nations don't want that, and I don't know why. It seems so counterintuitive. Everyone wants freedom. Everyone wants to enjoy their lives. Everyone wants to raise their kids and be left alone and all that stuff. First thing we have to do is wrap our minds around the fact that they don't want what we want. And also, we're pretty live and let live. They're not. They have a plan, and that plan doesn't involve live and let live. So I think we should need to really be realistic about when to be hawkish. And I think the problem is the right may be too eager to be hawkish and the left may be too eager to be dovish. And the answer is we should all be dovish when it's time to be dovish, and we should all be hawkish when it's time to be hawkish. And it seems like now's the time to get hawkish on China.
Yeah, I think, well, you said it very well there. One of the things that I think is a little bit different than it as black and white is last time I was on the show, we talked about this in a similar aspect. And I think you brought up Al-Qaeda as one of those type of parties. And I think with Al-Qaeda, there's definitely nothing we have in common with them. And in fact, Al-Qaeda, both the leadership and the people in Al-Qaeda are both people we completely disagree with. I think what's interesting is if you listen to people like Steve Bannon or whatever on the right who are very hawkish, they also differentiate between the CCP, which is obviously the ruling party of the totalitarian regime of China, and then the Chinese people. The Chinese people, he doesn't have an issue with. He has an issue with the CCP. And in fact, his issue is so big that he believes we're in a full-out war with them, or a cold war with them already in three of four facets. I mean, you look at the information war, which we're all seeing right now about the COVID spread and how it came and who's at fault and the propaganda around that and the war of words. We're also seeing it on the cyber side of things. We've obviously all been aware of the hacking and the different penetrations of our computer systems here. And then on top of it, we see it in the economic war, right? And I look at hawkishness, right, which is what's in the best interest of the people of the United States, the majority of the people of the United States. And one thing about the economic war that we have is that we did believe in this globalism that got us in a lot of problems with China, right? We moved our full supply chain over there of pharmaceuticals and various other very important national security interests so that they're producing them. And now we rely on them to get back over here when we need it in time of crisis. We've also seen a lot of our manufacturing complex move overseas, and we've seen them steal our technology, steal our patents, create these JVs. I mean, by the way, you've seen a lot of news about the Disney Shanghai park opening this week there. But no one talks about the fact that China, actually three parties in China owned by the government, own 57% of Disney Shanghai. Disney only has 43% of it. But that was a mandate that the Chinese government put in place. Hey, you want to put a theme park over here as an iconic piece of Americana business and IP? Well, we want to own a majority of it. And they've done that with GM, and they've done that with Intel and Starbucks and everything else. So there is a very difficult dynamic going on where we need to be hawkish. We need to change the way it's been done, and we need to make it more fair.
I have a question then. So you mentioned conservatives are generally more hawkish on China. Do Trump's business interests in China complicate that? Does it make it harder to be hawkish, or harder for them to get their agenda, so to speak?
you know, I'm trying so hard to stay apolitical about the whole thing, because I really feel like as a country, we need to come together on what we're going to do about China and dictate it from both sides of the aisle. Mm-hmm. Yes, Trump has conflicts over there, but so does a lot of Wall Street. So do a lot of corporations. So does, you know, guys at McKinsey or whatever it is. There's a lot of voices in this, and everybody's got conflicts, including me. I mean, I make a living off of how this relationship works, right? So I'm conflicted. But if you get everybody in a room that both has conflicts and doesn't have conflicts, and you have an open, non-third rail type of discussion about it, we actually have an opportunity of maybe having something constructive come from it. And I do think Trump has brought to light in a lot of ways the problem that has been ongoing between the U.S.-China trade relationship and the dynamic overall. How maybe he's been approaching it in certain ways has been right or wrong. But the fact is, we definitely need to continue where he started, and that's going to go past the November election, no matter who wins.
Right.
Yeah. Part of the thing that the part that worries me in general is China's being China. I get it. They're doing everyone's trying to do what's best for them. And then the businesses are trying to do what's best for them and or the NBA or whatever. That part I completely get. The part that's a little insidious is when people start speaking up about it and they get called a racist or their hand slapped or with this notion of I'm not allowed to critique China without being called a racist. And then also if you're going to propagate that thing where it's just you're not allowed to do this, then you're really going to there's going to be an unintended consequence that comes from that, because we need to really take a look at China. And I don't think it. First off, this country, which we're constantly cloaking ourselves with this racism shawl all the time, it's like we're so racist. I live in a neighborhood that has a lot of Chinese folks in it. So does Mike August. You can't get us to look differently at our neighbors because the government of China is up to X, Y, and Z. I mean, they've been up to something. Every government is up to something, and most of them we disagree with. I don't know if your neighbor was Vietnamese, would you be thinking about holding something against him because of whatever the Vietnamese government was up to? I don't really think we're wired that way. It's hard to be wired that way and live in the United States because everyone's from somewhere else. Like, that's how we roll. So I hate it when we stifle the conversation because we're not allowed to discuss this group because they're somehow different than us. Everyone is different than us. And look, we talk about Sweden as much as we want. We're not Swedish. We're allowed to have opinions and opinions about their government as well. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. And I do think what's going to happen as the election season progresses is that the China bashing is going to become relatively equal from both sides of the aisle. I think Donald Trump is already pulling Biden into the fray by calling him Xi Jinping's best friend and spending 25 hours in private rooms with him, et cetera. So Biden's going to have to fight back. You're going to see it down ticket too with Senate and House races and local government. So people are going to bring it to light. It's not going to be a third rail issue. I agree with you. This whole PC thing about it is sort of ridiculous and creates much more noise in what needs to be a really open, frank discussion than it should. So, yes, 100%. And by the way, it's like, I'm from Connecticut. It's not like the people in Lyme, Connecticut are upset that they have a great disease named after them that's killed a lot of people. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, a lot of these things are called what they are because of where they originated from.
Well, also, for me, who is very much endorses shame, I like shaming and I like judging. Hey, man, first off, I'm the guy who's lived in Southern California my entire life and has said Hawaiian Gardens should not be able to be called Hawaiian Gardens. It's a piece of shit. Hawaiian Gardens should be number 138, and we should get everyone a number and rank them and shame Hawaiian Gardens into getting their shit together. And if a disease or virus comes from one part of the world consistently, I want the name on it because I want that judgment to prevent the next one. So I'm very consistent with my Hawaiian Gardens one. Max Zapata, I hit a favorite tweet or like tweet. God, it must have been like 2 weeks ago. I've never brought it up, but I think it was actor John Cho explaining that if this thing was named Wuhan virus or Chinese virus, that he would essentially have a target on his back. And I hate that. I really hate that kind of talk. I really do. I think it's irresponsible. I don't think we're that as a country. I just don't. Well, look, here. You know what I was yelling at Dr. Drew the other day? Where do you think this fucking virus came from? Like, if you talk to every human being in America and you went, where did COVID-19 go? They'd go, I don't know. I don't know where COVID is. COVID city? COVID's a state? No. If you talk to 100% of Americans and you said, where does COVID-19, where did it emanate from? Where did it come from? Every single person would say China. Okay, so we know. We know where it came from. Now, are we out attacking Chinese Americans? That's the question. Because it's not like we don't know. You could call it the Mississippi virus, but we'd all know it came from China. Everyone, who do you know who doesn't know this came from China?
Well, the people we really need to check in with are the people from Corona, California, because I am worried about them.
That's
that city
right.
needs right. to be renamed.
Right. And they right. wouldn't be Corona 19 under my regime. Right. They'd be in the 200s or they'd be at the bottom.
Add another digit.
Cities we have. So if we all know where this came from, then it doesn't even matter what you call it. We already know. But my point is if the notion is, if you connect this virus to China, then we're going to go out and hurt Chinese Americans. I do not endorse that or sign up for that notion. We all know, and we haven't. Now you can tell me, oh, what about that Chinese couple who ran the grocery mart in Queens, and some guy in a pickup truck drove by and threw a rock at their. Always incidents of that. Always. Always. But it doesn't mean that's who we are as a country.
Well, I think just the fact that it's a debate angers. I mean, if you're, first of all, the people that act on that kind of stuff are very extreme parts of the population, obviously, and or pure racists or whatever they are. Just the fact that we're having this ridiculous debate over the PC nature of it only exacerbates the way some of those people might feel about it. If we just let it be and worried about stuff that was much more important in regards to all of us, we probably would mitigate any sort of problems with it because it would be labeled the same way most things have been over the course of time, and it wouldn't have even raised eyebrows.
Chris, when you say let it be, that is you speaking words of wisdom, my friend.
Well said.
Well done.
And I like John Cho, and I think he's a fan of the show, and I'm a fan of his as well. But it's just, here's what I'm saying. Everybody in the United States knows this thing came from China. We are devastated. People are dying. Every time you turn on the news, it's a new grim milestone. Now, projections of over 100,000 dead Americans and the worst economic since the Great Depression and blah, blah, blah. If there were stories of Americans terrorizing Chinese citizens, believe you me, that would lead CNN, MSNBC, Fox, everyone. That you would be on there. You would know it. You'd be hit over the head with it. If CNN found that Chinese people were being terrorized by Americans, they'd be over the moon about this. Believe me, you'd hear about it. Again, it doesn't mean it didn't happen or hasn't happened. It just means everything happens. The question is what kind of nation are we? And I don't think we are that. All right, you have that op-ed. Sorry.
Yes. The title is Coronavirus Reminds Asian Americans Like Me That Our Belonging Is Conditional. I called my parents a few nights ago to tell them to be cautious when stepping out of the house because they might be targets of verbal or even physical abuse. It felt so strange. Our roles had flipped. My plea mirrored the admonitions I received from them as a child growing up in Houston. The world, they cautioned, was hostile, and it viewed us as strangers, so they wanted me to stick close to my family.
I got it. And look, being Asian, growing up in Houston in, 1979 or something, I'll give it to you. That definitely could have experienced that. But it's 2020. The disease is from China. And to the best of my knowledge, and you guys watch the news, I've not heard stories about this. And if there were stories, believe me, we'd be hit over the head with these stories because it's a narrative that we're trying to enforce or reinforce. So I don't know why, but I can't stand us burning calories, making ourselves racist or more racist than we are. If we're 1% racist, why are we fighting so hard to make ourselves 46% racist? It's a bad use of a nation's time. All right, I'll get off my high horse. I do want to.
By the way, I agree with it. The waste of time thing is key, and I think what's the thing to keep in mind here is that there is a crisis. It's created chaos. There is damage that has been created between the two countries. But because we have a melting pot of people here in this country, Chinese Americans and white Americans and, Guatemalans, et cetera, like we have a nice balance of geopolitical sort of chemistry. And that hopefully will be a bit of the reason when it comes to the fact that we do have to get hawkish, but we don't want to get to the point of a kinetic war either, right? So hopefully it all benefits us that we have these type of discussions, but to waste time, like you're saying, on the PC thing when we have much bigger issues to talk about is a waste of time.
Agreed. So films, we can look at films two ways. So right now we're looking at the film industry, which you know all about, which is, we don't want to piss off China because they have such a huge market. But there's a way to kind of flip the script, which is, hey, China, you want films, don't you? Like, we do films. Fast 9's, coming out. You want to see Fast 9, don't you? Like, maybe, obviously, we need their money. But what if we said, hey, Tom Cruise is going to have the patch of Hong Kong on his bomber jacket. And if you guys don't want to see Top Gun, then don't see Top Gun. And then how fast before their people got agitated by not being able to see all the great product we produce?
Yeah, I think that's, yes, it's near and dear to my heart, the movie business between the two countries. Senator Cruz brought up that Tom Cruise jacket situation. I've seen the censorship both in the pre-production phase when you're actually developing the script and figuring out what's making the movie. And then I've seen it in the post-production phase where actually the Chinese censors get in and cut stuff out or they don't even let your movie into the market, right? What you're saying is a free market principle, which I actually would love to see in a theoretical sense. It seems like it would work, right? You leave the jacket on where he's got the Taiwanese flag, the Japanese
Taiwanese
flag.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, and then release it and see if people actually still want to see the movie or whether they're insulted by the movie and they don't want to go. And that would teach a free market lesson to the studio that made the movie. Hey, you know what? In that market, we should be smarter about it, because we lost a lot of potential revenue. The other way that I think is probably more realistic is if we utilize this crisis where China's trying to repair the relationship globally and we say, hey, look, here's a bunch of things that we would like done in order to give you some ammo so that you can rebuild relationships around the world. One is we don't want you censoring our movies. You can outside of your country. Inside your country, if you want to blur out a particular flag on somebody's jacket, that's fine. That's your market. You can do that. You want to cut that out. But around the world, we're going to have that flag on the jacket. And you can't tell us otherwise. And you can't blacklist the studio that does that like they had been doing with things that they were trying to censor globally. In fact, I remember myself, we were involved with a movie called Looper. where they threatened for us not to be able to release the movie in China unless we put the actress Summer Ching, who was the Chinese actress that played Bruce Willis's wife, in there, on the movie poster that was used around the world. Right. We had it on the poster in China because we wanted Chinese people to go because there was a Chinese actress in it. But she didn't have a big enough role in the movie to have her on the poster worldwide. But they forced us to do it. Right. That is something where we can't let happen anymore. They can't force a censorship or an influence beyond their borders like they have been.
Did she end up on the poster? I'm a huge fan of Looper, it's my all-time favorite movies, and she is a very minor part of the film and important to the narrative, but like, you know, maybe 3.5 minutes of screen time.
Totally. Yeah.
Did yep. she end up on the poster? Is that what she said?
She ended up on the poster. Wow. I mean,
that had to be confusing for viewers.
Yeah.
Well, she is in so little of it.
Well, and that was the thing is a, I mean, if you look at, for instance, the way we go back to Daryl Morey and the fact that he's utilizing his freedom, his rights for freedom of speech outside of China. It's one thing to go on, be a guest in their country and go say, you know, I support Hong Kong protesters. That's like going to somebody's dinner party and saying you hate their meatloaf.
Right.
But if you're on the outside of that house, you should be able to say what you want. And they can't clamp down or shut down your business in China. I think that is where we're seeing their influence go beyond borders. And that's something that we need to stop.
Well, you brought up a super basic, obvious point that I hadn't thought about, which is they want to influence outside of China, which I just thought, well, of course, you want to make these movies acceptable for the Chinese market, but you're so right. Like when we used to, we're still here a little bit, but we used to, you know, Ford would make a car for Europe and a car for the United States. They'd have little differences, smog requirements, stuff like that. Like business does that all the time. The German BMW was different than the American BMW. They'd make their own. Always better, by the way, fucking Germany, but always better for them. And then there was the ones they shipped to us that were a little bit different because we had a little different rules. We needed 5-mile-an-hour crash bumpers and certainly another set of rules for California. California has smog requirements. The cars that come to California are California cars. So like industry does that frequently. And for the last 100 years, I don't, this is basically us in California saying, oh no, all the cars need the California rules on it, which is insane. Just getting your own is a victory. So here's Top Gun China. Now go ahead and modify it any way you want. That'll be up to you. But the idea that they're pushing it on the rest of the world, that's the insidious part.
Well, that's, and by the way, an extreme example of that was several years ago, MGM and Sony made a remake of Red Dawn, which was such a great movie from the 80s, right?
Love
and
it.
The enemy in that was China, right? And of course, they're thinking, well, we don't, if China's the enemy, we're probably not going to make any money in China with that movie. But the fact is, like, it's sort of a pro-America movie anyway, so maybe it only has international business limitations to begin with. So we're going to go make it, but we're not going to worry about China. But China heard about the movie and said, you can't make that movie. And they had already made it. And then they said, well, you need to change it. It can't be China. It can't be China as the enemy. You got to make it something else. So they had to open up the picture and redo it as North Korea. But China was so mad by that time, they actually banned movies from those studios in that market that had nothing to do with Red Dawn, just other movies from those studios for a certain amount of time just to get back at them for making that film.
But this is a little confusing because this is all sort of optics, right? But what aren't they? I mean, don't they have a PR team? Don't they care about what this looks like to the rest of the world that they're so, for lack of a better word, petty about this?
Well, yes, they do have an amazing PR department. It's called the Ministry of Propaganda, which is probably the largest, part of the government aside from the Politburo. I think they're very good at trying to sort of message why they're doing things like that. And in fact, when we did Looper, they were the Shanghai municipal government, along with the central government, was on us about how we designed the backdrop of the skyline of Shanghai in 40 years in the future, because they wanted to make sure it looked a certain way and a appealed to people for their tourism and for all their messaging of being sort of the center of the world in 40 years. And they really wanted an extra amount of that footage shown around the world to display Shanghai in all its glory 40 years in the future. We actually cut quite a bit of it, and we almost didn't get the movie released in China because of it, because the China cut had, I think, 4 minutes of extra footage of Shanghai versus the global cut, which had 4 minutes less.
That's what I was thinking when I watched the movie for like the 10th time. Like, this could really use some more Shanghai skyline footage.
Actually, because I think I have.
Exists.
That's the China poster for it right over there.
I know. I looked it up online.
Yeah. So, Shanghai Skyline sounds like a Chris Tucker movie that hasn't come out yet. I'll say this because we're crunched for time here. All I'm saying is this thing where, hey man, live and let live. Everyone wants to just hug their kids and get along. Well, evidently China doesn't work that way. They're not like a lot of other nations. It sounds pretty petty. Hey, if they're sweating the little stuff like a skyline, imagine what they're doing with the big stuff like the space and the military and rockets and missiles. I imagine how much effort they have in that department. And so, now we know who we're dealing with. So we have to decide, are we a hawk or a dove? And moving forward, I'm going to check the hawk box. The book, Feeding the Dragon, Inside the $1 trillion Dilemma Facing Hollywood, the NBA, and American Business, is ready for pre-order as we speak on Amazon. It's going to be out July 28th, but pre-order it now and you won't have to think about it. The website, feedingthedragonbook.com. Chris, always enlightening.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And yeah, the book I really enjoyed writing because it gave me sort of a way to tell it in sort of a Michael Lewis story of how the process working between the two superpowers is. It is a fog of war. And I look back at it and I go, you know what? We are complicit in some of these problems that we need to address moving forward. And I'm hoping I can be at least a voice at the table during this debate, because it's something very important for all of us as Americans.
Thank you, Chris. We'll talk. We'll check in soon and we'll get updates as we go. We appreciate that. All right. Let me hit Raycon. Working from home, working on your fitness. Yeah, I'll be up in my gym. Just working. I'm trying to think of what. I'm trying to think of that song. Up in the gym.
It's working that's Lady Lumps or Lady Humps by.
I don't know.
Fergie.
No, it's Fergalicious.
Fergalicious. Yeah, I'll be up in the gym working on my fitness.
That's what I'm.
That was a
be
test,
doing.
And you failed, buddy. That was a test.
So whatever. If you're listening to something, you want to listen to it, not the kids in the next room or the TV in the next room, and that's why Raycon makes great, great earbuds before dropping hundreds on a pair of wireless earbuds. Check out Raycon, R-A-Y-C-O-N. About half the price of premium wireless earbuds, and the sound is amazing. I have them. Sonny is super religious with his Raycons. He loves them. Newest model, every day, E25 earbuds, 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing. More bass and more compact design for noise-isolating fit. It is the best, stylish and discreet. No dangling wires or stems either. Fit right in. And it was co-founded by Ray J, and celebrities like Snoop Dogg and Cardi B are obsessed with their Raycons. Right, Dawson?
Now's the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/Adam. That's buyraycon.com/Adam for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. Buyraycon.com/Adam.
All right. Lauren Lapkus is going to be on. She's a very funny character actor and leading woman now. New Netflix movies coming out with David Spade, and of course I know her best from Crashing, where she was just wonderful. Take a quick break, come back with Lauren right after this.